This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
This is the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of radio drama every Tuesday at RelicRadio.com. First off this week is Rocky Jordan. We'll hear the Deal Right Bull from October 23rd, 1949. After that, it's The Shadow and Horror in Wax. That story is from February 26th, 1939.
Buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Time now for Rocky Jordan, brought to you by Del Monte Foods, the brand preferred by more women than any other line of canned fruits and vegetables in the world. Far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against the backdrop of antiquity. Del Monte presents Rocky Jordan and this week's story, The Diorite Bowl.
I had just opened up the tambourine that morning and was back in the kitchen glancing over the menu for the day. Chris, my bartender, came in, nodded toward the front, said somebody wanted to see me. So I went out through the cafe, and there at the door, peering nervously in from the street, stood a skinny little girl, 12 or 13 maybe, dressed in the robes of the fellaheen. A small vessel was clutched in her hands, and what I noticed most was the strange look of anxiety and fear on her soft, round face. The same fear sounded in her voice.
Oh, kind Effendi Jordan.
That's me, little lady. What can I do for you?
My father sends his humble regret that he could not come today.
Your father?
El Mamad, he who brings the honey.
Oh, El Mamad, of course. Well, he's told me all about you.
I am the daughter, Sharon. If you will take the honey.
Sure. Come in, Sharon. Come in.
No, I cannot enter. I will go now.
Wait a minute, Sharon. You got some money coming, remember?
Oh, the money, yes. If you would get it quickly, sir.
She waited there as I set the vessel of honey on a shelf behind the bar, then went to the till for some cash. El Mamad had been making his deliveries to my tambourine regularly for a long time. I needed honey for one of my mixed drinks, and the fine product from his apiary seemed especially good. Or maybe it's just that I liked El Mamad. I was surprised that he hadn't shown up himself, and the actions of his daughter had me wondering. There you are, Sharon.
Muta Shakir, Effendi Jordan.
Why didn't your father come in this morning?
My father remains at the farm.
Sort of hoping to see him. We always had coffee together. Is everything all right with him?
Please, Effendi, if you would permit me to depart.
Of course, Sharon. Come on, run along. Give El Mamad my regards. He was quickly running away, and I was sure now her worry was connected some way with her father. As I stood watching, I saw a short, plump man in continental dress peer out of a doorway. The greedy eyes in his pudgy face shifted my way for a second, then he drifted after Sharon. I kept thinking about it as I finished up the tambourine and finally decided to find out from her father what it was all about. I drove across Cairo, south along the river and into the hills that fringed the desert. Soon I pulled into El Mamad's little farm, past the pigeon roost, the gate, and onto the house. Down the hill beyond were his well-kept apiaries swarming with bees that fed on clover fields from the Nile below. Nobody was outside the house, so I knocked and waited.
Who is this?
It's Rocky, El Mamad. Mind if I come in?
Oh, it's Effendi Jordan. Welcome to my humble home.
Thank you. Is your daughter here?
She has retired to the other room. But why would you ask of her?
Just a little worried, El Mamad. Is something wrong?
Wrong?
Sharon was frightened when she came to my cafe. When I asked about you, she wouldn't answer. She ran away crying.
Please do not be concerned. She is but a sensitive child.
Oh, there's something else, El Mamet. A short, pudgy man trailed her away from the cafe. Now look, maybe it's none of my affair, but if you're in trouble, I'd like to help.
Effendi, I deeply respect your most gracious friendship, but what transpires is not for you.
The man following wasn't one of your people.
I beg you, concern yourself no more.
Who was he? What did he want? Why are you locking yourself up in this house? All right. We had better drop it.
Oh, wait. Forgive my poor hospitality. I will have Sharon prepare the coffee. We will drink together.
Do you think you better answer that? Well, maybe I'd better.
No, no. I will answer.
He moved hesitantly to the door, slid back the latch, turned the knob, and cracked it just a little. And all at once, the door slammed open wide. Propelled by the heel of a hulking Turk who strode heavily in. He had thick, sneering lips and a long, pointed black mustache. His huge hand held a small gun.
I have come, El Mamad.
I pray you go from my house.
What's this about, mister?
Who is the American?
His name is Jordan. He has no part in this.
He will most wisely keep it so. Now, where is it?
I cannot tell you.
You know of what I speak? The bowl. Get it quickly.
Please, if you would but go away and return at another time, then I will be ready to...
What is this you say? Did you not make the agreement?
It is as you say. However, I need must have more time to think. But a little more time.
There is no more time. Give it to me. No!
But I cannot...
Then I will take it in my own way. Perhaps it is on the shelf. No!
I swear it is not here. Please, I beg you.
So. Soon I will see...
Mama, what's this all about? What's he looking for?
Effendi Jordan, I cannot tell. I cannot tell.
Enough! Oh, well, Mama. You choose to make it difficult. Very well, I will return. Very soon. For the last time. What does that mean? You, Jordan, will come with me back into Cairo. I do not wish you here. I do not wish you here. At all!
I don't argue with a gun, so when he waved it toward the door, I went out with the Turk right behind me. He got in the car beside me, and he didn't say any more as we drove back into the city. As we honked our way through a crowded street not far from the tambourine, he was suddenly out of the car and gone. In another 5 minutes, I was back again in the tambourine and headed for the phone. Just before I got to my office, a man seated at a back table spoke to me.
A moment, Mr. Jordan.
He wore the fez of the upper-class Egyptian, and I decided not to pass him up.
It is most important, Mr. Jordan.
Could it wait for a while?
I'm afraid not. I am Kasha Bey of the Egyptian government. Ministry of Antiquities, Mr. Jordan.
Oh, I see. What can I do for you?
Please sit down. I will explain as quickly as possible. Now, Mr. Jordan, is it possible that you have ever heard of the Diorite Bowl?
Doesn't mean anything to me.
A most wonderful relic of ancient Egypt. Fourth dynasty, almost 5,000 years old. Small, but of great value in its proper place.
Well, that's very interesting, but how does that concern me?
Please, I will continue. There is such a bowl now in the Egyptian Museum, but we have a strong reason to believe that there is still another, equally as valuable. It was unearthed recently, quite by chance, by one of the fellaheen while tilling his soil.
No, I follow. Go on.
It is the law that all such relics, when found, be turned over immediately to the Ministry of Antiquities, mm-hmm. for which the finder is paid a fair price. However, there are, shall we say, temptations which sometimes lead the finder to withhold the relic and sell it on the black market for a much higher price, you see.
Let's get back to the Diorite Bowl.
Mr. Jordan, such is the case with the finder of the new Diorite Bowl. It came to our attention only recently when he moved to sell it on the black market.
What's his name?
El Mamad. A good friend of yours, I believe.
I thought so. Why come to me, Kasha Bey? You must know where he lives.
Oh, why indeed, Mr. Jordan? If we asked, would he not deny? Then in his fear, might he not dispose of it quickly and perhaps even destroy it? At all costs, we must preserve his rare antique.
Oh, that makes sense. What about the police?
We prefer that they remain out of it until the bowl is quite safe with us. Otherwise, the consequences might be serious.
And what am I? Do you... go between?
Correct, Mr. Jordan. As an intermediary, you are a most wise choice. Please, please assure El Mamad that we have no desire to prosecute. The Ministry of Antiquities wants only the Diorite Bowl, and at once.
How do I convince him?
That should be easy. We are still willing to pay a nominal fee, £1,000, which I leave with you in this envelope, Mr.
Jordan. Oh, wait a minute, Cacheppe. I haven't agreed to all this yet.
Oh, for a friend, Mr. Jordan, please think it over. Once you have purchased the bowl from El Mamad, you will bring it to me at Talbot House. Until then, Mr. Jordan, I bid you goodbye.
Cacheppe turned and walked out without a second look at the bulky envelope he had laid on the table in front of me. I picked it up, put it in my pocket, went into my office, and finally put my call through to Captain Sam Sophia. But by the time he answered, I wasn't sure what I wanted.
Cairo Police, Sophia speaking.
Oh, hello, Sam. It's Rocky.
Oh, Rocky. What is on your mind?
I'm wondering if you have much contact with the Ministry of Antiquities.
Naturally, Jordan. In a nation such as Egypt, it is the most important branch of the government. We work very closely with them.
Mm-hmm. Any trouble with a black market in antiques?
Most assuredly. We are doing everything we can to control it, but a most ticklish business, I might add.
Now, why?
You must realize that antiquities are of intangible value and must be preserved at all costs. The police take a hand only when other efforts have failed.
Who's Cacheppe at the ministry?
Jordan, there are a great number of employees at the ministry. Do you expect me to know all their names? Tell me, why do you ask?
You ever hear of the diorite bowls?
The There is such a relic in the museum.
But another one, about to get on the black market, maybe.
Jordan, it is time now that you explain the purpose of your questioning. And at once.
Oh, just working a crossword puzzle, Sam. Thanks. Well, so far, Cacheppe's story checked. And the place to get the rest of it was from El Mamad himself, out at his apiary. So I kept the money in my pocket and went out the back door to go for my car. All at once, I wasn't alone.
To the wall, Jordan. Quick.
The point of his heavy knife at my throat meant business, and I backed up like he said. He was the pudgy, shifty-eyed character I'd seen earlier that morning following Sharon. He was wearing elevator shoes now, but it didn't help.
We meet at last, Jordan.
Watch out, you'll cut yourself.
Or you. Silence now. I get what I want.
Even if it takes following little native girls?
You'll keep your hands back while I search. I warn you, this knife...
Why don't you send the Turk around? He gets rough, too.
The Turk, I do not know.
I got news for you. He didn't find anything.
But I find something, do I not? An envelope filled with Egyptian pounds. You will need this no more.
Look, whatever your name is.
I thought with this you were going to the home of El Mamad. Forget the bowl.
Oh, was I?
I do not like it.
Tell me some more.
I do not like you, Jordan. I tell you to keep out of this. I tell you to return to your cafe.
And you keep the money.
I do. I keep the money and give you warning, Jordan.
I grabbed for his knife hand and he darted back, the knife clattering to the ground behind him. He whirled and picked it up by the blade, and as I dived in, he swung. The handle glanced off my head the first time, the next time squarely across the face. My knees hit the dirt, and he swung again. Then I clawed at the cobwebs, waiting for the knife, but the blackness got there first.
Del Monte Foods is presenting tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Pass the ketchup, please. That sounds familiar, but it means so much more when you say,
pass the Del Monte ketchup, please.
Yes, it means so much more, because Del Monte ketchup does so much. Adds so much zesty, hearty flavor to the foods everybody likes.
That's because Del Monte ketchup is made with pineapple vinegar.
Pineapple vinegar. Yes, pineapple vinegar. The big secret of Del Monte ketchup flavor. Pineapple vinegar is one of the big reasons Del Monte catsup is livelier and more satisfying. Catsup experts say the finer the vinegar, the better the catsup flavor. And pineapple vinegar is superlative vinegar. It has a special way of bringing out every bit of tomato flavor in catsup. It blends perfectly with the special herbs and spices to make the liveliest catsup that ever pleased a man. Yes, pineapple vinegar is the big flavor secret in Del Monte catsup.
For real spice tomato goodness, I wouldn't be without Del Monte catsup. It really makes plain food come to life.
And for all its goodness, Del Monte catsup costs less than many other quality brands.
Try Del Monte catsup. You'll like it.
Now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's Rocky Jordan story, The Diorite Bowl.
When things began to clear, I was still lying in the alley. My first thought was for the 1,000 pounds Cachafay had given me. As I reached for my inside pocket, I remembered it was gone. So was the pudgy man with a knife. It was somebody else bending over me.
Effendi Jordan.
Sharon, how did you get here?
My father and I came most urgently to see you.
Well, it's about time. Where is he?
What's your face, Effendi? You have been hurt.
Get your father, Sharon.
My father? It is the Jordan Bey. Come quickly. He has been waiting in the street.
Oh, my good Effendi Jordan, what have they done to you?
Forget about me, El Mamat. I want to know some things about a diorite bowl.
Then you have already learned.
That's right. You're in trouble, El Mamat.
I know. That is why my daughter and I decided to come and accept your offer of help. What I would tell you brings me only shame.
Now go on.
Some time ago, I unearthed in my fields the bowl of which you speak. I was aware at once of its priceless value and hid it away.
Didn't you know the law says you turn such relics over to the authorities? They'll pay.
I knew, my effendi, I knew. But I am a most poor man. I knew that I could sell elsewhere for a much greater sum. Finally, after much hesitation, I approached a certain man in Cairo and arranged for the sale.
Short, pudgy man, continental dress?
As you say. His name is Varios. I agreed to deliver the bowl at the time of payment. But then I began to realize my wrong and sent word to Varios that I had changed my mind.
Only you changed it too late. Varios sent the Turk out to convince you.
But even before that, I had received most violent threats. I was sealed to my bargain. You can understand my fear. I knew not what to do.
I can tell you that, El Mamad.
You will help me then, my effendi?
It's simple. Turn over your diorite bowl to the government right away.
This is my wish. But Jordan Bey,
they won't prosecute. I have their promise.
Then you have talked with him about this.
Kasha Bey of the Ministry of Antiquities came to see me about it. He's waiting for an answer.
Then you may tell him that I am ready.
Just one thing, El Mamad. The money Kasha Bey gave me to pay is gone. Varios took it from me.
So, the will of Allah, it is just punishment for my great wrong.
I took El Mamad and his daughter Sharon up to my room over the tambourine and told them to wait there. My only job now was to get Kasha Bey and bring him together. I picked up the phone, then changed my mind and decided to go get him just in case. Just as I got out the door to the street, a black limousine pulled up and a familiar figure stepped to the curb.
Jordan?
Oh, hello, Sam. I was just leaving.
A moment. I've come for a word with you.
Sure, what about?
I think you very well know. Not more than an hour ago, you phoned me regarding a relic known as the diorite bowl. One not now in the hands of the government. When I questioned your interest, I got nothing.
I told you, Sam.
What you said was only evasion, such as I have come to expect of you, Jordan. Now listen to me. There is something going on, and I intend to know what it is.
Don't let me stop you.
So, still you will tell me nothing. It would, of course, be futile at this point to warn you away from what does not concern you.
And we're both wasting time, aren't we?
Yeah.
Sam got back into his car and drove away, and I headed for the Talbot House. I wasn't more than 2 blocks on my way when I noticed Barrios, the guy who had cuffed me around in the alley, following behind. I decided to shake him. It took only a few blocks, and I reached the Talbot House. I told Kasha Bey El Mamad was waiting. Right away, he came with me back to the tambourine. They all sat down in my office, and Kasha Bey was all business.
El Mamad, Mr. Jordan tells me that you are ready to turn over to us the diorite bowl.
I trust in Jordan Bey's counsel, Kasha Bey.
I still say you'd better do it, El Mamad.
As you advise, effendi.
We hold to our promise not to prosecute. Once the bowl is in the hands of the ministry, neither you nor we need ever speak of it again.
El Mamad knows the money's gone.
Regrettable, but it cannot be helped now. Unless we call on the police and tell
them... No,
that...
I beg you, for the sake of my daughter and I, let us have this done quickly.
Very well. Where is the bowl?
I hid it well, where none would suspect.
My father speaks truly, Kashyap.
Where is it?
The diorite bowl is in one of the hives of my apiary. In this hive, there are no bees, but the bowl is there and safe.
And how does one know which hive?
It is marked with paint, a cross of yellow.
You are telling the truth this time.
Before Allah, it is so.
Turk, come in.
Now, wait a minute. Who's out there in the cafe?
You may see for yourself, sir. I enter Kasha Bay. Hold the gun on him, sir. Do not let them move.
They will not move.
Jordan, it is the rude man who come to my house. What does this mean?
Since when does this big Turk work for you, Kasha Bay?
Since the beginning of it, Jordan. Not yet clear.
Yes. For one thing, you're not with the Ministry of Antiquities at all.
But, my effendi, did you not tell me that...
Sure, El Mahmoud, I told you. Looks like I sold you a phony bill of goods.
Most conveniently for me, Jordan. Now, Turk, allow no one to enter or leave this room until you hear from me.
I invite them to try, Kasha Bey.
Turk stood menacingly with a gun as El Mahmoud drew Sharon to him and sat with bowed head. Kasha Bey stepped to the alley door, opened it, and went out. And I stood wondering how I'd let myself be suckered into a deal like this. Looked like we were in for a long wait, but I was wrong again. The shots had come from the alley. We all whirled, and that included the Turk with the gun. I grabbed the chance and slammed down on his arm. He dropped the gun, and I came up with it just that quick. I held it on him as I opened the door and glanced out to see Kasha Bey sprawled face down in the alley, and the back of Barrios running far down as he turned into the street. I knew he'd heard the whole conversation from the window, and I knew where he was going. El Mahmoud, can you hold the gun?
If it needs be, effendi.
Take this one here and hold it on the Turk. Shoot if he moves.
That I will do also.
And Sharon?
Yes, Jordan.
Get to the phone there on my desk and call Captain Sam Sabaya, the Cairo police. Tell him to rush some men over here to pick up the Turk in Kasha Bey. And tell him I said to hop out to your father's apiary the quickest way he can.
Most quickly I will call the captain. Most quickly.
Right away, I was out and driving across Cairo fast, knowing that Barrios was doing the same. Seemed like every camel and donkey and jalopy in Egypt was on the streets to slow me down. But finally, I was out on the winding road leading south. Just at dusk, I pulled up the hill past El Mahmoud's house. I got out and ran down the hill toward the apiaries, and I saw that Barrios was already there. He had just lifted one of the hives and was picking up a small bowl from underneath. I kept right on going, weaving cautiously around the hives filled with bees already settling for the night. Barrios saw me and started backing up, carefully at first.
Have a care, Jordan. No one will take the bowl from me.
I kept closing in, still
no,
weaving toward him.
You. Keep back, Jordan. Do not try.
I'm getting close,
time.
Too close for Barrios. I watched his hand go to his
well,
pocket. As it came out with
you.
A gun, I ducked. They missed, but the crack of the gun brought the bees swarming violently from the hives toward the sound. I kicked over a hive for good measure and was running. I made it away with only a couple of stings, and when I got where it was safe to look around, I saw Barrios scrambling away down the hill, slapping wildly at the bees that covered him like a thick moving blanket. Suddenly, he stumbled and fell rolling. That's when the bowl flew from his hand, struck a rock, shattered into a million pieces.
In just a moment, Rocky Jordan returns to conclude tonight's story. You know, folks, the best way to find out the real value of a cooking sauce is to ask experienced cooks who use it. You see, there's a mighty good reason why Del Monte tomato sauce has been a favorite with good cooks for a whole generation. Let Mrs. U.E. Smalley of Pasadena, California, tell us about it. She said,
"Why, I guess I've used hundreds of cans of Del Monte tomato sauce during the past 26 years. I wouldn't be without it. You like to use a product you know is dependable, and that is certainly true of Del Monte tomato sauce. Every can is nice and smooth. Nobody needs to tell me that Del Monte tomato sauce is made from ripe tomatoes and fine spices. Its flavor tells me that. Food that tastes good does you more good, I always say. And my tomato sauce recipes are family favorites. Del Monte's extra flavor makes any dish better."
Thank you, Mrs. Smalley. Yes, in tomato sauce, it's the flavor that counts. And the rich, spiced tomato flavor of Del Monte tomato sauce brings out all the best flavor of the food you cook with it. Del Monte tomato sauce is so low in cost, too, yet it does such big things for dishes like stew, spaghetti, and hash. Next time you go shopping, buy the original tomato sauce, Del Monte. Back now to Rocky Jordan for the conclusion of tonight's story.
Well, Sam Sabaya and his men showed up a couple of minutes later. We grabbed some head nets and got down the hill to Barrios. By the time we'd managed to scrape all the bees off of him, he was unconscious. The puffy little man was in a bad way as we took him back into town into a hospital. From there, Sam and I hurried on to the tambourine. The police had already come and gone, taking the Turk and the body of Kasha Bey with them. But El Mahmoud and his daughter were still there, anxiously waiting. It didn't take long to tell them everything that had happened.
And so, one of the most valuable relics of Egypt is gone. For all this, there is nothing.
My father!
Quiet, Cheryl, my daughter. There is nothing to be said.
El Mahmoud, although certain of your actions since finding the bowl cannot be condoned, you can hardly be held to be blamed for its final destruction.
Ah, it is gone because of my own greed.
But please, my father...
Sharon, it is not well that you speak before the men.
There are so many who can be blamed. Is that not so, Jordan?
Sure, Sam. I neglected to make one little phone call. Ministry of Antiquities about Kasha Bey. The trouble was, his story checked too well.
Needless to say, the Bey was not with the ministry, but he knew much of their methods of operation. As for Varios...
Yeah, it's pretty clear, Sam. El Mahmoud made a deal with Varios to sell the bowl, and very wisely changed his mind. But Varios wasn't to be stopped, started making big threats, trying to get Mahmoud to reveal where the bowl was hidden.
And somewhere, Kasha Bey stepped into the picture.
Yeah, he heard about the Doriat bowl and wanted it too. I figure he sent the Turk out to Mahmoud's house just for my benefit.
How so, George?
Once I knew that El Mahmoud was in real danger, it was a cinch I'd do everything possible to help. After Kasha Bey's pitch about being with the Ministry of Antiquities, all I had to do was talk Mahmoud into turning the bowl over to him. And I did.
Now that it is destroyed, what will they do?
Well, it is difficult to say. The loss of such a priceless article will not go unnoticed.
My father, listen to me.
Sharon,
now.
I told you
but
that...
But I must speak. The Dirite bowl is not lost.
Oh, well,
what is this you say?
I also have a confession to make. I knew where the gold was hidden, and that my father was in danger. It was only for that reason that...
What are you saying, Cheryl?
Only that I took the bowl from the hive, replacing it with a common crock from the kitchen.
Then what did you do with the Diorite bowl, Cheryl?
In the Diorite bowl, I placed the honey and brought it to Jordan Bay only this morning.
Jordan?
Hold it, Sam. We'll find out.
Where are you going?
Right here behind the bar. I set it on the shelf in plain sight when she brought it this morning. Here, that's the one.
Oh, careful with it, Jordan.
Effendi, it is the one. It is indeed the one.
There can be little doubt. A remarkable find. A relic almost as ancient as Egypt itself.
Sharon, my child.
Did I do right, my father?
Ah, by your innocence and love, the grace of Allah has been with us this day.
Mama, you can rest assured the Ministry of Antiquities will pay you well.
You better take it out of here, Sam, before they catch me mixing drinks in it.
I fully intend to, Jordan. When you look on it again, it will be on display at the Museum of Egypt for all to see.
I got news for you, Sam. I'll be just as happy if I never see it again.
For the finest in tomato flavor, enjoy the whole family of Del Monte tomato products.
Del Monte catsup and chili sauce, Del Monte tomato sauce and canned tomatoes, and Del Monte tomato juice.
Remember, buy wisely. Buy for flavor. Buy Del Monte. Del Monte, the brand you trust for flavor in so many good foods. Rocky Jordan, written by Larry Roman and Gomer Cool, stars Jack Moyles in the title role with Jane Avello as Sam Sabaya, and is produced and directed by Cliff Howell with original music composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Remember, you have a date next week at the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Same time, same station. And the story is the DeMarco Affair. For real country corn patch flavor, buy Del Monte corn. Golden cream style or whole kernel. Both styles, both Del Monte. Both mighty fine. One thing more. Your Red Feather community chest organizations need your help. Give generously during this campaign. Remember, everybody benefits when everybody gives. Larry Thor speaking. Rocky Jordan is presented over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Your local Blue Coal dealer presents The Shadow. These half-hour dramatizations are designed to forcibly demonstrate to old and young alike that crime does not pay.
Before the curtain rises on Act One of today's adventure with The Shadow, remember this, homeowners. Because of abrupt changes in temperature, the coming months are the most treacherous of the entire year. So do the safe thing, the wise thing, and order Blue Coal for your next fuel supply. You'll find that this quality-tested hard coal gives steadier, more healthful heat. It's easier to bank and control, and it burns evenly and prevents your home from becoming suddenly chilled or overheated. Remember the name Blue Coal for perfect home heating comfort in any kind of weather. The Shadow, a serious character who aids those in distress and helps the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice belongs. Today's story, Horror in Wax.
Lieutenant Carter, I want you to check that new list of stolen cars with a 4 o'clock detail before the men go on duty.
Right.
You, Benson, take a squad of 20 men and help Cardona with the detail that's guarding the mayor at that rally tonight.
Okay.
And you, Brophy, you better... just a minute. Hello? Commissioner Weston speaking. What's that? When did this happen? All right. Give me the address. Yeah. 22 Prince Street. I got that. Yeah. I'll send a man out right away. Brophy.
Yes, Commissioner Weston.
This is a job for you. Rest of you men can go now. Get out on the job and keep awake. Here you are, Brophy. Take this address. It's a rooming house out in the south side. Woman's been found dead in one of the rooms.
Ah, now the poor thing. Murdered by some blackguard, I suppose.
Never mind shedding any tears about it. Get out there and find out what happened.
There she is, Lieutenant Brophy. Lyon, just the way I found her when I came up to clean it up this morning.
Who is this woman?
Never saw her before.
Didn't you rent her the room?
No. I rented the room to two men. They came in last night. They were gone this morning. She must have come in during the night.
Did they leave baggage or anything?
Oh, they brought nothing with them and took nothing, I guess.
Well, I'll look her over and see what they've killed her with, if they killed her.
Well, she certainly is a fine... The saints above, what do you call this?
You found something?
Hard enough to curl me tongue so I can't say a word. Here, feel that hand.
You want me to touch her? Oh, no. No, you don't.
The hand is as stiff and hard as the rock, and so is the arms and her face. Why, sure, this is no woman at all. It's a wax figure.
Wax figure?
Certainly. The lads have rented the room and left it here were likely as not a couple of dress salesmen. Nothing more.
And she's not really dead?
No deader than she's ever been. It's the devil's own things they send a police officer out on nowadays.
Well, what'll I do with this wax figure?
You leave it where it is. We'll send the wagon for it. Maybe the wives of one of the men can cut her clothes on it. But, Commissioner Weston, it's the truth I'm telling you. It was nothing more than a wax figure as hard as rock.
A fine thing to leave behind in a furnished room. Well, you better send the wagon out there. Hello?
Commissioner Weston.
Yes, who's this?
This is the Shadow.
Yes, well, what do you want now? We've had peace and quiet around here lately. Oh, say, just a minute. I'll hold the wire a second.
That Shadow, Bobby. I've got to have some fun with it.
Shadow, we just got a case that has us all baffled. Would you like to help us?
Of course, Commissioner. You know I'm always willing to lend whatever assistance I can.
Oh, fine. Well, here's the dope. A woman's been found dead at 22 Prince Street out on the south side. We don't know who she is or how she died or a thing about her. I'll put the case into your hands if you want to tackle it.
I'd be glad to, Commissioner. I'll go out there right away and investigate.
That's fine. But, Shadow, you've got to make me one promise.
Yes, Commissioner. What is it?
Well, the medical examiner hasn't cleared the case yet. So I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't touch the body or disturb it in any way.
All right, Commissioner. I hardly think it'll be necessary.
Well, good luck then, Shadow. I'll see you later.
Oh, no, Commissioner. You'll hear me later.
How's that? Oh, yeah, okay. I'll hear you later. Wolfie, he fell for it. Yeah. Fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker.
I'd give me eye teeth to be there when he examines that dead body.
This is funny, Brophy. We've got the Shadow, a great crime expert, investigating the death of a wax figure.
Well, Lamont, you search every inch of this room, but there's not a single thing that would identify this woman's body.
No, Margot. I didn't expect there would be.
Perhaps I'd better search the clothes.
No, Margot. Don't touch the body. Commissioner Weston specifically asked me not to.
But there might be a tag on the clothing or something.
Hardly. The men who left this body here planned it too well to leave any telltale markings. You'll notice that even the manufacturer's name has been scraped off the soles of the shoes.
The features have a strange wax-like appearance.
Yes. Amazingly wax-like.
Well, if there's nothing more to do here, Lamont, I'll be a bit sorry to leave as soon as possible.
All right, we'll go, Margot. Commissioner Weston is probably waiting for the Shadow's report on the case, and we don't want to meet any of his men here. We mustn't disappoint the Commissioner.
Wait a minute, Brophy. Till I see who this is. Hello, Commissioner Weston speaking.
Hello, Commissioner. This is the Shadow.
Oh yes. Well, Shadow, how did you make out? Have you made any progress on that case I gave you?
Yes, Commissioner. A little, I think. The case is fairly obvious.
You don't say.
The woman did not meet her death in that room.
What's this? You're sure about that, I suppose?
Positive. She died someplace else and was brought to the room.
It didn't take you long to figure that out, did it? What are you going to do, Shadow?
We've got to find the men who brought the woman there.
You're getting off on the right foot, all right. But how are we going to find them? Have you figured that one out?
Not exactly. But I'm not going to waste any time. You hold the body until you hear from me.
You're sure we're going to hear from you, aren't you?
You'll hear from me a lot sooner than you expect, Commissioner.
Well, now, in that case, Shadow. Shadow. He's hung up. Brophy, did you hear that?
Every word, Commissioner, right?
It worked right.
This is about the funniest thing I've ever run across.
You pulled him close, Commissioner.
He didn't die there, he says.
I was right in that. He certainly was.
You're regarded, Professor Whitehead, as an outstanding authority in these matters, and I want you to know that I trust your judgment implicitly.
Thank you, Francis. Of course, it's a fairly common knowledge. From time immemorial, scientists have labored with the idea of preserving life through freezing, waxing, mummifying, and various other such methods.
Yes, I read only recently where a group of Russian scientists froze a man and then performed a very difficult operation. I believe the man survived.
It's very possible, Miss Lane.
But this waxing process, Professor, preserving the human form by turning it to wax, have you had any personal contact with such cases?
I haven't actually participated in such experiments, but I've followed them quite closely. In fact, here's a book right here on my shelf. Yes, this is it. This is an account of the experiments of Dr. Jean Fanon, famous French scientist. He invented a chemical which he injected into the arm. Within a few hours, the subject assumed not only a wax-like appearance, but all organs were stilled and a state of suspended animation attained.
Well, what happened to Fanon? Did he continue these experiments?
No, he never got the chance. He was laughed out of the community where he lived. When he revealed the fact that he had waxed the body of a young girl, he was stoned.
What happened to the girl?
Oh, Fanon revived her, right enough. The experiment was entirely successful.
Then he not only had a waxing process, but also an antidote to revive the subject.
Yes, a restorative, he called it. By the way, here's a picture of Fanon in this book.
Oh. Yeah. Rather an interesting-looking face, don't you think so, Margot?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very interesting. But one I wouldn't care to meet on a dark road.
Well, do you think Dr. Fanon is still alive, Professor?
That I am not prepared to say, Mr. Cranston. It was reported he came to America 10 years ago. In any case, he dropped from sight about that time.
I see. Well, I'm very much obliged to you, Professor. We must leave now. This talk has been most interesting. And I promise you, it will result in something even more interesting.
Are you nearly finished, Lamont?
Yes, Margot. Quite finished. We've checked every wax figure dealer in this entire territory. Business connections of all of them are easily accounted for. That is, all but one. This Cosmos Wax Figure Company. I can't find a single firm that does business with them.
Is there something in there?
I don't know, Margot, but I think that... Oh, that's probably my friend Vic Marquette, the Internal Revenue Department. Hello?
Paul, is that you, Clancy?
Oh, yes, Vic. Have you found anything?
Well, that Cosmos company you inquired about.
Yes?
Yeah, there's a ship due at quarantine in a few hours with a large consignment of wax figures for them.
You say the ship is due in a few hours?
Yeah.
Vic, I want you to do me a favor.
All right.
I want you to assign Miss Lane and myself to the custom detail that goes on board that ship, the quarantine.
Well, I don't know what you got up your sleeve, Cranston. It's not exactly official. Oh, I guess it can be arranged.
All right, we'll be right down. I'll explain matters to you then.
What are we going to do now, Lamont?
I'm only playing along on a hunch. But if it works out, Margot, I think we'll have a little surprise in store for our friend Commissioner Weston. You're the man in charge of this shipment of wax figures?
Oui, monsieur.
Do you always store them in staterooms? Wouldn't it be less expensive to ship them in the hold with other freight?
Oh, but monsieur, these figures are not great. They're works of art, as you can see.
Yes, they're really amazing. I don't believe I've ever seen such lifelike figures.
Yes. The attention to detail is astounding. Even to birthmarks and scars. Well, we're very much obliged to you for letting us see these figures, sir. And good night.
Good night, monsieur. Good night, madame.
Good night.
Don't say anything for a moment, Margot. Let's get down to the companionway. Here, Margot. Now tell me, did you notice anything unusual about those figures?
I thought they were simply astounding reproductions of human features.
No, I don't mean that. Did you notice on the left arm of each, there was the tiniest puncture, such as might have been made by a hypodermic needle?
No, Lamont, I hadn't noticed. What do you think it means?
I don't know exactly, Margot. But we're following that shipment of wax figures to its destination.
In a moment, you'll hear Act Two of today's story. Homeowners, the finest quality anthracite that you can buy is Blue Coal. It's the only trademarked anthracite. The only coal which is colored a harmless blue to identify it and to guarantee you that you'll get the most of your money heating results and satisfaction. That's why it's important to insist on Blue Coal by name when you order fuel. Once you've used Blue Coal, you'll agree with me and with countless thousands of satisfied homeowners that it certainly is different from ordinary hard coal. And that difference is in the steadier, more helpful heat Blue Coal gives you, plus the fact that it requires less furnace attention. That's because Blue Coal is a guaranteed product of Glen Alden, the nation's largest coal company. Each ton of Blue Coal is carefully sized, prepared, and washed to remove any existing impurities. But most important of all, each carload is submitted to a thorough laboratory test to guarantee its superior quality before it's accepted for shipment. Those are the reasons why Blue Coal banks and burns better and gives longer intervals between firing. Those are the reasons why it will pay you to order Blue Coal by name if you want perfect all-around heating comfort and satisfaction in the treacherous months ahead. Call your nearest dealer. His name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the word Blue Coal.
Stop the car right here, Margo. That's the Cosmos building, just ahead there.
Dingy looking place, Lamont. Doesn't appear as though there's anybody inside.
Yes, there is, though, Margot. Look down at the back there. could just see a bar of light filtering through that shuttered window.
Oh, yes. What do you suppose they could be doing in there at this hour of the night?
They've already gotten a shipment of wax figures from that freighter. That's probably what occupies them now. Better turn off your headlights. We'll sit here and wait a while.
Look, Lamont. That side door is opening. Someone's coming out.
Sit tight, Margot. And watch.
The man. He's coming this way.
Yes. Quiet. Margot.
What?
Look at this man. Look at his face.
What? Well, Lamont, this is amazing. It just can't be possible.
Quite possible, Margot. That man just walked past was one of the wax figures we saw in the freighter tonight.
Why, it's like seeing someone step out of the grave.
It may be little less than just that, Margot. Men stepping out of the grave.
Lamont, you don't actually...
I don't know what it is, Margot. I've only got a hunch. I'm going to see if I can't get a glance through that window back there.
I'll come along, Lamont.
No, you better stay here.
I'd feel more comfortable with you.
All right, Margot. You'd feel better. Come along. We'll have to be very careful, Margot.
The rest of the building seems to be deserted. All but that one room.
They're all probably busy in the back. Let me take your hand, Margot. It's pretty steep here. Quiet now, Margot. This window may be open. They might hear us. I'll see if I can take a peek through this crack here.
See anything?
Margot. Look.
Why, the room is fixed up like a laboratory.
Yes. There's some more of the figures we saw on board ship.
That man with his back to us, dressed like a doctor.
Yes. I hope he turns around so we get a good look. Margot, over there in the corner. Recognize that face?
Why, yes. It's the man that was in the ship cabin. The one who took care of the wax figures.
Right.
There, Lamont, the other man's turned around. Look at him.
Yes.
Isn't that the man whose picture Professor Whitehead showed us?
Yes, Margot. It's Dr. Furneaux.
What do you suppose they're doing?
I can't see. Working at the other end of the room, mostly. Margot, you go back to the car.
What are you going to do?
Look around here and see if there isn't any way of getting into this place.
But there's a gang of men in there, Lamont.
I've got to take the chance, Margot. Now go, Margot, quickly, quickly. This is a matter for the Shadow.
All right, Lamont, but do be careful. Even the Shadow might be shot.
Too.
Very good. Give the wax figure another injection of the restorative. Half quantity this time.
Hey, Doc. That guy's groaning like he was in awful pain.
That is as it should be, Chip. The muscles and tissues are losing their rigidity. The process is often very painful.
Gee, this sure is a great idea of yours, Doc. Imagine turning people to wax with a jab of a needle and with a jab of a needle bringing them back again.
Don't have quite so much to say, Chip.
I wonder how people would react. They knew of your great accomplishment, Doctor.
They would laugh. Laugh as they always do at things they don't understand. They laughed me out of the legitimate pursuit of my science. But now I have the satisfaction of accomplishment.
Where am I? Where am I?
Say, that guy's coming too now, Doc.
You're all right, my man. You've reached your destination.
Then this is America. I am in the United States? Yeah. Put these clothes on. You must leave here at once.
You will listen to my instructions, my good man, and be sure you follow them to the letter.
Yes.
In addition to the sum you have already paid us for smuggling you into this country, remember that our agreement is that you pay us 25% of your earnings for the next 5 years. After 5 years, you will return for another injection of the restorative. If you fail to come back for this injection, you will become wax again. And for all time. If you fail in your obligation to us, or if you ever reveal the means by which you were smuggled into the country, you will be denied the restorative. The effect, of course, will be the same. You understand?
I understand.
Dress then and go.
Monsieur le docteur, this one, he does not revive.
I'm afraid he will not. You men on the boats are becoming very careless with the waxing fluid. We had a girl die on our last shipment.
But I assure you, doctor, I followed your instructions exactly. One injection, so much as is in this hypodermic, every 12 hours.
Ah, you must have miscalculated the time. My solution cannot fail. Here, Chip, this body will have to be disposed of, as you disposed of the girl a few days ago.
Okay, Doc, it's as good as done.
I want you to...
What's that?
What's the matter? You hearing something?
I thought I heard footsteps outside.
I'll take a walk around outside. No use taking chances.
I will go with you.
Okay. We'll take this guy out with us. Come on, you.
Yes. I'm dressed now. I go.
Be right back, Doc.
Chip.
What is it, Murek?
That car over there. Do you see anybody in it?
Yeah. I think I see a priest.
It's strange that anyone would sit in a lonely place like this with their lights out.
Yeah. It does look kind of fishy. Let's find out what it's all about. Come on, Murat. Keep your gun handy.
There is somebody in the car.
Looks like a girl. What do you know about that?
I do not like it.
She won't like it either when we get through with her.
What are you doing in here, lady? Waiting for the morning mail?
Who are you? What do you want?
We want to know who you are and what you want.
That's none of your business.
You're a fresh dame, eh?
Chip.
Yeah? What's the matter?
This girl. I have seen her before. Yes, I know. She was with the customman aboard the ship.
Oh, yeah? Come on, lady. Get out of that car.
I'll not get out of this car. You get away from here.
Grab her, Murat.
Keep your hand over her mouth, Murat. We'll take her into the doctor.
What is the silly doctor? She is the one who came aboard the freighter with the customs officer.
A customs, Marla?
You let me out of this place, you hear?
You did not come here alone, madame. Who is with you?
There's nobody with me.
What were you snooping around for?
I wasn't snooping around. I was sitting in my car.
Madame, you impose a very unpleasant duty upon me.
What do you mean?
I do not know how much knowledge you have acquired around here, but I must be certain that whatever it is, you will never have a chance to communicate it to anyone else.
What do you intend to do?
Murat, give me that hypodermic.
Wait, doctor. Don't you dare! Keep your hands off me!
Madame, I regret that I must give you an injection of this fluid. In a few minutes, you will turn to wax.
Oh, no.
In that condition, you shall remain.
No.
For all time.
No, no, let me go! Let me out of here!
Chief Murat, hold her tightly!
Let me go.
Quiet!
Let me out of here.
That gag will keep her quiet for a while.
Let's leave up Murat. With him. Now, the hypodermic.
Quite so fast, Doctor.
Who was that? Who spoke?
I did, Dr. Furneaux.
Who are you?
I am the Shadow.
Shadow?
I do not understand. What is the Shadow?
I've heard of this guy. He's the enemy of the underworld. Nobody can see him.
This girl, she is with him?
Yes. Dr. Furneaux, release her. Take that gag out of her mouth.
Ah, you are very clever, monsieur. Very clever. But I think you will find I'm not so easily beaten.
Do as I tell you.
I don't want to have any fight with the Shadow.
No, do I.
You are cowards, both of you.
I'm getting out of here.
I will go too.
Chip, Murat, you will not run out on me.
I'm going.
Stay where you are.
You stay if you...
Murat, you shot Murat.
Yes. And now you... Oh. And now, Shadow, where are you?
Right beside you. And I...
Oh, no, you don't. Ow, my arm!
There, Furneaux. Your gun is on the floor. You're helpless. Now will you be so foolish as not to do what you're told?
Very well. I cannot fight the unseen. What do you wish?
Remove the gag from the lady's mouth.
Of course. There you are.
Oh, get me out of here. Get me out of this horrible place.
You're all right, Margot. There's nothing more to fear.
Madame, I will get you a glass of water.
Oh, no, you don't, Doctor. Be too easy to poison the water. Dr. Furneaux, you are coming with me.
Where would you take me?
To the police. They will deal with you.
I am afraid I will have to disappoint you, monsieur. Life and the people of the world have humiliated me enough. They will never subject me to the humiliation of a criminal cell.
What do you mean, doctor?
This hypodermic I hold in my hand will answer your question most eloquently. Many people have known the result of my great discovery. Now, I shall know it myself. Ultimate.
Doctor, I beg of you, don't destroy yourself. There's always hope for a man of your skill, even though you've so grossly misused it.
No, monsieur. The world laughed once.
Now it will neither laugh nor weep. One injection. An overdose. So, and you shall witness firsthand, monsieur, the results of a great discovery.
Doctor, don't. You mustn't do
it
this.
It is
you
done,
really
monsieur.
Mustn't.
It is done. I destroy the last bottle of the restorative. Now, my secret dies.
Lamont, look. His skin is turning white. His body is becoming rigid.
Miss Margaret, watch. He's turning to wax. Just as he's turned others.
Oh, Lamont, I can't bear anymore. Take me out of here. Take me out, Lamont. Take me home. You mustn't worry anymore, Lamont. I'm quite all right now.
Now? Given me a couple of very anxious days, Margot, since our encounter with Dr. Fanon.
I'm sure I can never stand such an experience again. Now it appears as something I've dreamed. Lamont, what of those people Fanon smuggled into the country? They'll die in 5 years if they don't receive the injection.
Why, Margot, that was simply a bluff. I've checked through Fanon's notes. He used this ruse simply to hold them to their promises. They're quite safe.
I'm glad.
Strange. But I suppose, in a way, Commissioner Weston has the laugh on me after all. For my part, I don't feel there's much reason for laughing. As evil as Dr. Fanon was, and as badly as he misused his great talents, I can't help but feel that his discovery might have had potentialities for good beyond belief. Perhaps it will occur again, in a mind worthy of great things.
Now a word from Blue Coal's heating expert, John Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good afternoon, friend. You know, you just can't operate your furnace efficiently and economically unless you understand how to regulate your furnace dampers. Every furnace should be equipped with three dampers. The ash pit damper, located at the base of the furnace, below the grate level. The turn damper, located in the smoke pipe behind the check damper and the boiler. And the check damper, located between the turn damper and the chimney. In milder weather, when you want a slow-burning, lasting fire, the check damper should be wide open, the ash pit damper closed. It is very important that your check damper be large enough to adequately check the fire. If it is not, it will certainly pay you to have an additional check damper installed by your plumber. If you're having trouble in regulating your furnace, your Blue Coal dealer will gladly send a John Barclay serviceman to give your heating plant a thorough inspection. There is no charge or obligation for this service. I thank you.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Shadow Magazine is now on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, Blue Coal, America's finest anthracite, will again present another thrilling adventure of the Shadow. Be sure to listen, and be sure to burn Blue Coal, the solid fuel for solid comfort.
There's more from the Relic Radio Show at RelicRadio.com. You'll find this podcast, all of the other podcasts, and everything else Relic Radio available there for free. Thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. Your support makes all of this possible. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back tomorrow with Case Closed and next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.